Blog Talk Radio.
Whoa, whoa, it is for Terrain Tech Talk. And for those of you listening, probably aren't listening because we're actually doing this at a different time. But hey,
but the studio audience is there.
They are on it. They got the word, and they're so loyal. They just had to be here.
It's like the same amount of people showed up as the last time we did the show. Amazing.
I know. Isn't that that's
commitment?
So ironic.
Yeah.
But so today's topic is how to support and train your employees that might be handling the role of technical support. Because, as we all know, the pace that technology changes is at lightning speed these days. So how do you keep these people, you know, up and running, keep them aware of how to support your products, whether it's a physical product, a software product, a service that you're offering? And so, you know, I thought that's you know, because it came up in a discussion that I was having earlier today, and this gentleman was telling me about an organization that is an outsourced tech support company. That's all they do. And and they handle everything from, you know, a telephone technology, computer technology, to maybe an industrial type product, and they really have to understand the product well enough, obviously, to take on the role as if they are an employee of that company. And so one of the techniques that they use, which I thought was very unique, and I said, geez, you know, they should probably do a case study on this, is that they hire very young people traditionally that are not afraid of technology, so they're, you know, just they were born with it. So that part, you know, is kind of the profile that they're looking for initially, but they've removed any kind of middleman layer of management so that each of the people that are in the call center kind of police each other, or they're overhearing someone maybe responding to a call. And maybe if they didn't answer that person's question correctly and the other person heard that, they'll say, hey, you got to call that person back because you misinformed them. You know, we don't want to get a bad reputation of that person then trying to fix their challenge and having to call back in and say, you know, this person didn't help me and now I'm still stuck. And so I thought, well, how do other companies do this? Because, you know, part of what we are involved in is we've launched a call center simulator. You know, so a lot of the people that we talk to are these what they call BPOs or business process outsourcing organizations. So there's a very large one that I spoke to recently called Sykes. They have 50,000 global call center employees. And so how do you help those employees learn to support that product quickly? You know, and I know you kind of had some experience with tech support type types of training activities when you worked at Siemens, is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also when working at Cigna, the healthcare organization. But, you know, depending on what time of the evolution in technology, it certainly changed significantly. Like, we were distributed technicians, so at the time, we did a lot of desk-side support, which is really a luxury these days, I think, to have somebody come and fix your PC or go through. It's so much more from a remote location if it's your, you know, just your customer support center kind of situation, either housed locally, housed within the United States, or even offshore somewhere, or one of these outsourced companies that you're talking about. It really became imperative understanding what the process flows for troubleshooting and getting that information to your first-line people so that they could solve the issues that were going on very quickly, like under 10 minutes. I think they even tried to get them under 5 minutes, and if they needed to do something more than that, then they had to hand them off. Of course, there were, you know, special cases that just wasn't going to work, but for the most part, they really tried to focus on doing that. And so they had a lot of metrics as to what people were calling in with and troubleshooting. So there's a lot of categorizing of information as somebody was calling in, you know, press 1, press 2, what your problem is, to get you to the right group of people, or really, which is what I always assumed, oh, it's getting me to the right group of people. It can't be getting me to the same pool of people. However,
right.
It's going to get the people that are going to answer your call the information they need quickly to help troubleshoot the problem or to bring up the proper support scripts to have them ask the right questions. And it,
right.
You know, and again, right. Knowing that, oh, we had an application update last night and we had some issues with that that we didn't expect in testing. These are the things you're going to be experiencing. Here's the top 5 ways of solving that problem. And just keeping a real open channel of communication between the support team and the application support team when crisis types of situations happen, or even just at times where you expect that you might have higher call volumes, like application rollouts, or like for us at our organization, January was a huge renewal time of when you brought in a whole bunch of new people into the system
right.
that had a lot of questions, unfamiliarity with the product, unfamiliarity with the support service of their health insurance. And so, you know, call volumes were much higher. You also had higher stress levels with people being unfamiliar
yeah.
and, you know, nervous, and this is healthcare. And so I think you have to be also very supportive of those people, supporting people on the phone, of this is the situation you're going to run into, and, you know, this is when you need to take a break and when you need to hand off to somebody, because it's going to be higher volume, higher pressure. Everybody's a little bit on.
Right. Well, and then, you know, so it's this whole kind of domino effect of, let's say it's just software. So software is getting built, released, maybe it's an upgrade, et cetera. So how do you quickly get, you know, the information that a tech support person is going to need at the same time it's being released, get them up and trained, getting them knowledgeable what to say, and then also kind of the whole ecosystem of that. That, you know, like you said, you know, how is that person being impacted that's handling those calls? What type? But they're also being, there's pressure on them as far as, are you using a pleasant tone of voice? Are you, how long has that person been on hold by the time they get to you? You know, so do you have an IVR in place that, as you said, has you go through the little phone tree thing of, you know, is it tech support? Which type of issue it is? What operating system you have? You know, so do you have a system in place using technology to help expedite that customer experience so that by the time they get to you, they either, A, have already had a good experience of getting to that point, and then they
right.
get a knowledgeable person, or, B, they've had a bad experience, puts them in a bad mood, so the first thing the person on the other end of the phone has to do is get you calmed down and, you know, so they can address the problem of the technology, not just the problem of I have a dissatisfied customer before I even begin that process.
Right, right. The thing that always is impressive to me, this is indicative of what little expectation I have, but I'm always so happy when the information I've keyed into my phone actually makes it to the person who's talking to me.
Right.
And it just pisses me off, I'm sorry
yeah.
to say, that when you ask me to put in all that information, and it doesn't. And they say, oh, I'm going to need your account number.
Yeah.
I'm going to need this and that. And you're like, I just entered that.
Yeah,
what
was the
verify
point of bothering
it?
Me with that?
Right. No, come on.
Yeah. It's a stall tactic.
Right. Right.
I think
that's
what it
is. It feels like. And it's,
yeah.
And it just, I think it's off-putting for so many of us to just feel like I've taken the time to key in the number correctly, and sometimes keying in that number correctly requires you to say, is this the number you keyed in correctly? And it repeats it back,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, oh, God, yes. So, I don't know. I'm always happy when that works.
Well,
and then it gets to the right people, and it's easy, and it's, you know, we just kind of get to start in the middle with a live person rather than starting at the beginning.
Right. Right. Well, I've seen, you've played this game, I think, in the past. You don't know Jack.
Yes.
Okay.
Love it.
So that company, whose name is escaping me right now, I'll have to look it up. But they've taken that concept of you don't know Jack and put it into kind of web conversations. And meaning, let's say I have a problem. I'm going to the website, and so this voice either appear or a text bubble will appear and say, hey, what are you looking for? What can I help you with? And then they kind of through these, not smarmy, but, hey, what's going on? Let me help you with your problem here. Are you trying to look up your health care benefits? Or your, you know, so it helps you kind of whittle your way down to the essence of what you're looking for and helps filter that in a kind of a fun way.
Right.
And the company's here based in Chicago, and the name is escaping me right now. But so they've taken that same kind of
Jellyvision,
creative.
Jellyvision, is that who it is?
Jellyvision, that's it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And and use that in a way to help support, you know, whatever your product is. And so that would be one way of kind of at least helping get to the heart of the problem. And so by the time you get expedited to a live person, they should know exactly what you're looking for because it came from maybe that prompt from the website. So you know, oh, this is a call coming in about X.
Right.
But so many times, you, like you say, you don't get that. That filtering process is kind of pointless.
Well, and it's just a time waster. It seems like productive until you have to repeat yourself again. And it's just, that's note to self, anybody out there that runs those types of things, that's, I'm sure your data says that having people enter information twice, even when you tell them I'm just asking you to verify it, really doesn't feel like that's the truth. And can we verify in another way if that's really what we're doing? Because it's just irritating.
And a lot of times, you know, maybe you've had an IVR in place and you've already, you know, the company says, well, we've already invested all this money into this box, and to improve it, we're going to have to invest all this other money. In, you know, so part of it is just a profitability perception of, you know, they're not looking at the big picture of, well, gee, do you think if we had customers that got through the process faster and had higher customer satisfaction scores, they might do more business with us or might tell people that they had a more pleasant experience through a tech support scenario.
Right.
You know, so that's...
I hope
that's,
that answer is yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, sometimes... so last night I was at an event that talked about Challenger, which is a sales methodology that a lot of organizations are using, and it's taking people away from being an order taker to being a problem solver. And so one of the examples they talk about is Dent Supply. It's a supply, dental supply place. Came out with
I was thinking
new...
they have a supply of dents. I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, come
Isn't
here. I'll
hail?
Give you some dents.
Right.
And so they were creating a cordless drill or device, that, you know, if you're teeth cleaning, whatever, that was more ergonomically designed so that the dental hygienists wouldn't get carpal tunnel because they're always kind of, you know, twisting their hand in a way with the older instruments that caused them to get carpal tunnel. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with the drill that the dentist is using. So that in their mind, I don't need a new drill. This one's working fine.
Right.
Why would I buy this one? So they took it into the impact to your business is increased absenteeism and more workman's comp claims being filed, and therefore you're going to have to pay that person for being absent because they're sick, and you're going to have to pay and submit claims for workman's comp, which means your insurance rates are going to continue to grow. So they took it from the big picture of, there's an impact to your business because you're not using this other type of drill that will reduce that problem.
Right.
So if it's
that's
an infrastructure
cost. You care
cost,
about your employees' hands being useful as hands.
Yeah. What are you saying?
Instead of this carpal tunnel claw that you've developed after the overuse of the...
Like I, too, was a dental hygienist, yes. These women walking around with, like, these claw hands.
Claw hands. I know. Now all of a sudden I've got these lobster claw hands that I'm anyway.
Exactly. So same thing for put infrastructure in place that can support your employees. So one of the examples I heard from someone that recently, and I saw this at, I spoke at the Performance Support Conference down in Austin, and one of the companies has software and I'm curious how they do this, and again, this would be a, you know, really nice solution to put in place, is it will build in prompts to any software program you're using, or let's say you're looking up a customer's record. You can do it so that it will pop up to say, be sure to ask them this. So if it knows what page you're on within the software, let's say it's a CRM or a billing type of software, you can create these little prompts. This little thing will pop up to help reinforce what you should be asking for, what troubleshooting tips you might give the customer. Now, I've seen other software that's built into the customer service software based upon that page. But this other software, I think, was much more, wasn't hard-coded into the software itself, so it gave you some flexibility as far as what programs you're able to kind of make that appear in.
Oh,
I forget the name of that. Yeah. So, you know, if you can't completely rebuild your IVR, you can't completely, you know, the channel of how things get released, launched, for some reason, if something's broken there, find some other way of either getting those people up to speed, giving them ways to prompt them as they're on that type of call, or at least filtering calls. There's another study that I didn't get a chance to read all the results, but they were doing a study around, do we cross-train call center employees so that they can take any kind of support call, or do we only have people handling specific issues that they're troubleshooting? And I think with the and this was done a while back, so I don't know if the calls that they were handling were super complex or just kind of general in nature. But
right.
From my first blush at it, there was really no significant difference in doing it either way.
That's fascinating.
Which I thought was really interesting. I thought it would be a dramatic drop in performance for those people that were cross-trained because, you know, they're not a super expert on everything. They just kind of
right.
know enough about some of the other things that they're not a specialist in.
I made the same assumption as you did, and that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But I wanna go back to that because I thought, well, maybe I just glanced over it really super fast, so maybe, and it had
right.
you know, grids and charts to visually show the two groups being compared together. So I thought, oh well, I don't really see any significant difference in what they're doing here. So I don't know, maybe not. But it was an
right.
old study back in 2003 or 2004.
That's
so
really interesting because I would imagine too, Nancy, this is the hierarchy within support is seeming to be such the way you do it, of having a low-level triage support and
right.
then maybe a middle tier, and then you have your exceptional cases that interact with the third-level support people.
Yeah,
And, you know, for me, I always hoped to get escalated to the third-level support person because they would just fix the problem.
instantly. Yep.
Right.
Versus
yeah,
like, restart your computer, refresh your modem. I'm like, I've done all that, lady. You know, I'm not a spring chicken. I know what I'm doing.
Right. I know you have to kind of like present your credentials as a technician, technical user, to the technician that you're talking to. Like, really, I know this.
Right.
Okay, I've really tried.
Right. Exactly. It's like, please don't.
We can go through them again.
Waste my
but
time.
I'm just telling you. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So crazy.
Say, I have a PhD in blah, blah, blah.
All right, ma'am, we're going to start at the beginning then.
Oh. What?
Oh, you're an art
history
major.
What are you insinuating?
What?
Oh, yeah, exactly. But, you know, it is interesting because these BPOs are really becoming the dominant model for a call center. And when I went out to call center week in Vegas, I was just like, gosh, what is, you know, when did these BPOs kind of take over? And it's basically, they're all kind of buying out the little guy, so to speak. So it was, when I was at Sitel, who's one of the largest, I said, you know, do you see this as a trend? Do you see that you're going to just come down to where there's maybe four major players, like the telcos, like maybe four major players down the road where you've got Sitel, you've got Sykes, not Cengage, there's one that starts with a C, and you've got maybe four main players, and that's it.
Wow.
I'd hate to see that just because that creates kind of this
monopoly.
Competitive, yeah, a monopoly, and kind of cuts out the little guy that might actually be better at what they do. Like this company that I was talking to earlier. I mean, the fact that they have low turnover, they get these people so skilled that, in fact, I think you said there was 8 employees that got hired by the manufacturer. They were so good at what they did that they hired them and let them move out to Silicon Valley and make, you know, 6-figure incomes. Of course, cost of living is much higher out there. But gave them the opportunity to get that level of career move without really having, you know, a bachelor's degree. They got really good at how technical they were able to, you know, support that product.
Right.
So
right.
I'd rather have somebody like that on the other end of the phone than somebody that get, you know, a role that keeps getting churn rate because it's just a body to fill the seat, and I'm a BPO, so I can support your product because I have a pool of 500 employees that I can pull from to, you know, put on that phone.
Right. Yeah, innovation is definitely seems to be the capital of the smaller startup company. And sometimes large companies are like your giant Tyrannosaurus Rex. It doesn't know what his tail's doing from his nose.
Right.
At least that is often the perception. But that's so refreshing, Nancy, what you're talking about with those folks that got to go out to Silicon Valley and really change their lives so much. Because what that says more than anything, again, I think this is really important for companies to know this, and maybe they do, that taking care of your employees, looking for those, those key people that have the skill sets that you want to grow and help them grow out of your company, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
The place where they're better. If you're looking out for their welfare, certainly making sure that we're taking care of the customer, you're going to have, it's so easy. You're going to have customers that are being supported well that turn into clients that do more work with you. It turn into selling more product, and so you have some turnover because you have great people moving on to great things that may eventually become customers later on that are going to be deciding between this BPO or that BPO. Well, I worked for that company, and I really have a good relationship. They've got a good place, good thinking of where they want their people to go. I'm going to go with you. It's just a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
Rather than the sweatshop mentality of I've got 500 workers, let me throw 40 at this one app and see who works and who doesn't.
Exactly.
It makes so much sense to take care of your people.
Well, and they have, he says, sometimes you see mother, father, son, grandson, you know, or whatever. You know, you see multi-generational because they have a lot of Hispanic-speaking employees and, you know, it pays anywhere from, he said, $11 to $20 an hour. And for someone that may have not had the opportunity to go to a 4-year college or even a 2-year college, you know, if they do a good job. So they're only going to bring in people, they're going to carry their weight because, like you said, they all kind of police each other.
Absolutely. And it's funny. I think I remember early on at some companies that I've worked for where multiple family members working at the same company was not a positive thing. Like, oh, we don't want to do that. It was like, really? Why not? So they get to spend more time with each other as well, because Lord knows we spend half of our day at work with people we are our family. And hopefully you have a good relationship with your family that you would want to spend all that time with them. But it just seems like, again, a potential win-win and not something to disregard. Like, oh, I don't want to have the miring or the webbing of having multiple people from the same family. It's just brilliant, I think.
Yeah, and so, you know, so that's kind of, I saw that as a good kind of discussion point and jumping off point for, hey, you know, let's talk about how do other companies do this and what challenges do people have out there that, you know, maybe people could use as a new model. And, you know, reflect on that and see if there's other things that we can you know, share with people that they might be able to learn from.
Right.
Great. So on that note, woo!
Are we done? Oh, my goodness.
Done already, yes. Well,
time just flies.
I know. Well, I'm cutting it a little bit shorter today, but I've got a whole bunch of demos and back-to-back meetings, and so, you know, this is our busy, getting busy time of year, you know, right after Labor Day is usually when things pick up.
Go sell, Nancy.
Yes, go. Yes, I got to go sell. So I'm sorry. I don't want to apologize for that, but but I'm off to the next adventure. All right, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.